I'll say this, once you take about 50, 75 depots as a lawyer, you get comfortable enough where if you forgot it, you had a depot and you were unprepared, you could go in there and if it was a case like your bread and butter, you could pull it off, right? Yeah. Right. When it comes to something like a products case, you can't. You can do it to an extent, but if you don't know the facts, you don't have the ability to pull them back in and keep control of them, and you can lose control quick. It sucks, right? There's nothing fun about preparing for a depot. There really isn't. There's just not. You're reading a bunch of documents. You've already read one. You're trying to keep them into an outline, and then you got to figure out a way to keep them organized on the side. It's just not fun. And the depot's fun in that when you're in there, but getting there. Same with trial. Trial is fun when you're speaking. During the evenings of trial and the months leading up to it, sucks. Yeah. Anybody that says like, I love trying cases, it's like you either try, you know, 2-day trials only, or you have not tried enough cases to hate it yet, because it's just not fun.
Welcome to Bad Law, Worst Facts. My name is Michael Tackler. Today I got Bill Ogden on. We are going to talk about the Alex Jones case. And Bill, give me a little bit of your background. Tell me, you know, where you're working at now and how you're killing it. And then we'll kind of get to this case. I'm super excited. You have no clue.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I am an 11th year attorney, I guess. My firm is Farrah and Ball. I've been a partner there for a few years now. And we're trial lawyers, so we started majority of my beginning of my career, we did automotive product liability work. So we did a lot of tire blowout rollovers, roof crush defects, airbags, either aggressive deployment or a non-deployment. And so we kind of had, once I started getting into it, we all realized if you can do a products liability case that's engineering intensive, but the product's going to fail doing 70 miles an hour, it's so complicated to get through that and get the experts and get the case liability. So if you can do one of those the right way, we firmly believe you can do any type of case besides maybe family or probate law, because I just don't deal with them.
That's just a little tougher, right?
Yeah. Or criminal. I'll fight for people's money. I'm not fighting over freedom. I have a lot of respect for people that do. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have a lot of respect for people who do products liability. Not only do you have to spend like a ton of money to maybe potentially find out there's a case or not, but then you've got to like dumb it down for a jury to understand it. And not saying the jury's dumb, but you know, it's something that people go to school and even get PhDs in just to do this. And you've got to make it so someone with maybe a high school degree understands it and then on with everything else.
Yeah, so you're proving your standard personal injury damages case, but on the liability side of it, it's difficult because you have a PhD, usually biomedical expert, to say what the body was actually doing in the vehicle during the event. You got an accident reconstructionist. You have your airbag or your tire or your roof crush expert. And you know, it's just, that's just getting to there. And then you get some, a lot of times you got to bring in an ergonomics expert on warnings and human use and human factors. And so, yeah, it gets super expert intensive, which means super expensive quick. I mean, if you're going to do an auto products case and you take it, you're going to do it right out the gate, you're probably dropping 150 grand in experts to retain them.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to try the case, you can easily get into 7 figures quick getting through a trial, and the trials are all long. I mean, you're talking 3, 4, 5. My guys have done, you know, I think Wes and Kyle 2 years ago, 3 years ago, two of my partners did a case for like 9 weeks straight. And it's exhausting. So yeah.
Bring that intensity in a trial for 9 weeks straight. I don't know. I haven't done that. I don't know if I will do that in my career, to be honest with you.
A good friend of mine out of Beaumont, his name is Brent Kuhn. And he's like a rock star, like lives the rock star lifestyle too. But he did an asbestos case back in the day, back in the 90s, for like 11 months, like insane amount of time. So yeah, they can get up there like that. I haven't had to, thank God. I hope I never have to get there.
I think you guys doing products, especially when you have to not only talk to your expert, but understand the situation to the point where you can dissect and break apart the defense experts. I think that's what really helps, you know? And so kind of building that takes time. It's like, I forgot who I was talking to the other day. I was like, you know, work being a lawyer is kind of like being kind of like a bodybuilder working out, you got to put in reps, like so many reps, and then you kind of get that where you're going at. So to be able to dissect a you know, crazy expert opinion on some crazy products case, like, and getting those reps in on every single case all day like that, it's probably why, you know, when Alex Jones has this crazy line of, you know, of answers, you guys are able to be patient and say, look, we're going to get there. We're going to get to exactly how we want to play this at trial and how we want to deal with this. But tell me about the Alex Jones case.
Yeah. So we're auto products lawyers in 2015, okay. Maybe 2016. It was when the Parkland, Florida school shooting happened. And Alex Jones made a post, or his website had made a post saying the Florida shooter is a communist. They posted a picture of a guy wearing a shirt that's like all the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of communism, but they're all like at a party drunk and one's got like a lampshade on his head. And it's like a parody on the communist, you know, party that they're having right there. Turns out was not Nicholas Cruz. Ended up being a young man from Massachusetts named Marcel Fontaine. And through the internet and social media, Marcel reached out to us and said, hey, can you, you know, you guys are in Texas, can you guys help me? And Mark Bankston, this is all the InfoWars cases, those are his babies. He came to me immediately and was like, hey, we got to call on this. And I was like, I'm in 100%. I used to listen to Alex Jones back in college because it was entertainment. You know, it was sure. JFK, 9/11. It was stuff that, like, you know, and then I stopped listening to him and I was in law school when Sandy Hook happened. So I remembered Obama crying, but I didn't remember a lot of the facts of it. And I didn't really see a lot of what Alex Jones had done during that time. And so, as soon as we filed Marcel Fontaine's defamation suit, the next day, Mark got a call from Neil Heslin. And that was the trial that we did. He called him and said, hey, we're involved with a firm. They haven't done anything in years. Like, can you help us out? And Mark's like, yeah, we can do it. And he spent, I don't know, a week and a half, you know, reading New York Times v. Sullivan and all those First Amendment and defamation cases from back in the day. We wrapped our heads around it. We filed. And then here comes Lenny Posner or Posner and Veronique De La Rosa, which are another set of parents. Right. So we represented two sets of parents and then Marcel Fontaine against Jones. And I will say that discovery on that case was the most fun I will ever have in this profession. I genuinely mean that because I got to do every single thing I've always wanted to do in a depo, but okay. Was too afraid to do it.
Give me some examples. You can't just leave me on like that. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Every single thing. Let's move on.
Yeah. With the corporate representative, Rob Dew. He wasn't prepared at all. And in 30B6 or Rule 199 depots are my thing. And I could bring value to the firm by being the guy for those. And so that's what I did. So when they came here, Rob Dew is, you know, you can go online. There's a couple of, I think both actually of mine of his are on our YouTube channel. He said, I'm a Second Amendment steward. And I was like, oh, you're in a well-regulated militia? And he was like, no. And I was like, well, which part of the amendment are you a steward of? And he's like, the right to bear arms. And I'm like, you're not talking about the animal, right? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, do you know what a bear is? You know, it's like shit like that. And so, yeah, I would just have fun just twisting and turning. And I called dibs on Owen Schroyer from the get-go for his depo because I knew who he was. I'd seen clips. And watched him, you know, he's the guy that goes to all these rallies in Trump. He went to a women's march in all this Trump gear and was like, oh, I'm here. You know, they're like, why are you here? Trump's terrible. And then he's like, oh, I'm here supporting the victims from Epstein Island. And everybody's like, oh, I can get behind that. Right. Yeah. But he was using that really as an opportunity to find just uninformed, misinformed or ignorant people. And would kind of hammer them with these hard hitting questions. And if they didn't know, he'd make them feel stupid. And I was like, and he's roughly my age, I'm 36. And so I was like, I want to do that to him. And so when it came time for his depo, I mean, I literally walked him through what he did at a march on video than I had the video. And then I showed him the video of him doing it. And I just go, you kind of see where I got my question and answer format now? And he just goes, I tip my hat to you. Like, that was all he could say. Cause I mean, I just hammered him the same way he did it to somebody else at a women's march. And so, they were all intense and it was fun because we were just running them ragged throughout it all. And it was a revolving door of defense lawyers. One would come, none of them really, besides the first, Mark Enoch, he's out of Dallas. He was, and Brad Reeves. I have some respect for Brad Reeves. He's a younger guy out of Austin that had the case up until right before trial. But other than that, it was a lot of family law lawyers. It was just, no real big firms, I guess, wanted to take this case.
Yeah.
It wasn't that Alex didn't have money, right?
Right.
But every time somebody came in, they'd say, I'm a straight shooter. I'm going to fix this discovery mess. Then 6 months later, we win a motion for sanctions. They owe us another check. They're out the door. Here comes somebody else with the same thing. And so we had created such a mess through discovery for them that no matter how hard somebody tried it, Brad Reeves actually did try really hard to fix it. He just couldn't. There was no possible way he could. And so we had set that trap. We didn't really set it. We didn't know we were setting a trap at first, but then once we realized we had one, we used it to our advantage. And so we didn't really have a liability when it came to trial. We didn't have a liability strategy because liability was already, we won it on default judgment because of like 9 sets of discovery abuse. Finally, we were like, we have court orders of them compelling them to give us videos, to give us documents, and then just blatant disregard for it. And so, yeah, the judge eventually threatened, default a few times. And finally, after, 6th, 7th motion for sanctions, they granted it. And so the trial that we had was just on damages.
You just had a damages trial on this one.
Yeah. The interesting part of it is that when we got defaulted, it also defaulted liability on punitives. So because of that, our damages trial only could go a lot more. We could talk about a lot more conduct because it went to the punitive side of the damages. And so that opened the gate. We basically got to do a liability trial and give all the facts that we want.
I was literally going to ask, how did Alex Jones get on the stand then? But that makes sense.
Right.
That makes sense.
And actually, we didn't call him. They what? Did.
They called him? That was a bad idea. What were you thinking there?
Oh man. And
so, did they think he was going to be personable or something? Or come on.
I mean, there's something, I will say this. He is captivating. I mean, he's got a giant, very loyal audience. There are people that find that. So, just wasn't on our jury. It's 2 days before trial. Trial is probably what full week and then a couple days the next week. 2 days before we start picking a jury, email box dings. It's from the defense lawyer at the time, his office, and that's Andino Reynal with the lawyer. He used to be a U.S. attorney, actually, in Laredo, I think. And so we click on the file, and it's like 250 gigs. And right. I'm like, whoa. And so
what's
I start
here.
Yeah. So I start clicking through, and you can just see from the names of the files, I'm not supposed to have this. I mean, you've got.
Oh.
internal correspondence. I mean, it was, and so we immediately said, stopped. We said, hey, I don't think you meant to send, I think Mark responded and he said, I don't think you meant to send us that. And, and Dino responded to us and said, disregard. Okay. And in Texas, there's when you do accidentally produce something that you're
not
protected, there's a clawback provision and there's certain things you have to do.
Right.
And you have to identify with specificity what it is and why it needs to be clawed back. I mean, you're talking 250 gigs. It would have taken them 6 months to go through everything and try to do that. So he just said disregard. And you have 10 days from the time you give them notice. They have 10 days to cure it and whatnot. So we got to sit there and wait, knowing what we have. We got to sit there for 9 more days in trial before we can use it. So we waited an extra one just to make sure.
Just a little extra day.
We're like, do you count day one? Do you not? Is day one, and then day 10, is that you got to go complete or, So we waited until the 11th day.
I gotta say, that's one thing in our profession that we're like always like, wow, we're really getting in our heads about things, but you have to do that kind of thought process. 100%. But you're like, how am I, you know, 10 years in television thinking, does the day start this day? Does it start this time? Like, well, how do I figure this out? Like, it's really frustrating, right? Because you're like, you know, how have we?
And then we got the weekend.
Does that count?
The weekend, right. You know, we played it safe.
So all this culminates into you bring this up on trial. Is it at the 11th day?
So the 10th day or the 11th day, we want Jones on the stand.
Okay.
And we're debating on whether to call him because it's just, I mean, if you watch the depots on YouTube, he's all over the place. Very hard to control even under that, you know, format of question and answer. So at the last second, we decide we're not going to call him. And they say, Judge, the witnesses that were, you know, she rests us that day. And she says, the defense says the witnesses tomorrow are going to be Alex Jones.
Okay.
And so we're like, here we go. We got it. They called him. We're good. So he shows up and what was in the files that they sent me was an image file folder of every single text message he had sent for like 2 years to everybody, his wife, his friends, politicians, former Fox News late night show hosts that recently left.
These text messages, he said he had not had them, and it had been for a long period of time where you guys have been asking for it, right?
Right. So there was a discovery request saying all text messages that reference Sandy Hook. He said, you know, they give us this. We've looked. We don't have anything. Well, then we just do a search in the file that they gave us of every text message. And there are Sandy Hook texts. And so that's how we get to use this. And so Mark, I think it's probably one of the, it'll probably go down as one of the more famous moments in this decade
too,
as far as a trial, just because it was being streamed. And I mean, the video itself has, you know, 15, 20 million views. And then there's so many TikToks and Instagram.
And there's separate ones. Like, and then there's other attorneys like me, right, that are like taking clips from it and like putting it as part of their thing. So no, it's big. Yeah. So let me show my viewers what we're talking about here. So
yeah.
So Alex Jones, just at this point in time, has no clue that his attorney has accidentally just given text messages that you guys have been chasing for, at this point, I think it's been years at this point, right?
4 years.
That's
four
right. Years. 4 years. You've been chasing these text messages. And then at the final end, right, you guys wait to that 11th day that we were talking about. And Alex Jones gets on the stand the next day.
Yeah.
Jones, you know how an iPhone works, right? You've had iPhone text messaging for several years now.
Yeah.
What does it mean if the messages are in blue? Whose messages are those? Whose phone is this taken from?
I don't know whose phone's taken from. I mean, I turn the phone over and take stuff off.
Can I have you look in the very bottom below the very bottom left corner? Is that your phone number?
Yes. So you did get my text messages. And then said you didn't. Nice trick.
Yes, Mr. Jones. Indeed. You didn't give this text message to me. You don't know where this came from. Do you know where I got this?
No.
Mr. Jones, did you know that 12 days ago, your attorneys messed up and sent me an entire digital copy of your entire cell phone with every text message you've sent for the past 2 years, and when informed, did not take any steps to identify it as privileged or protect it in any way, and as of 2 days ago, it fell free and clear into my possession, and that is how I know you lied to me when you said you didn't have text messages about Sandy Hook. Did you know that?
I told you the truth. This is your Perry Mason moment. I gave them my phone, and then...
Mr. Jones, you need to answer the question.
No, did you know this happened?
No, I didn't know this happened. But I mean, I told you I gave him the phone over. Just
answer the question.
You said in your deposition, you searched your phone. You said you pulled down the text, did the search function for Sandy Hook. That's what you said, Mr. Jones, correct?
And I had several different phones with this number, but I did, yeah. Well, of course, I mean, that's why you got it.
No, Mr. Jones, that's not why I have it.
My lawyer sent it to you, but I'm hiding it. Okay.
Mr. Jones,
Mr. Jones,
please just answer questions. There's no question. Mr. Bankston also only asked questions.
Sure. Mr. Jones, in discovery, you were asked, do you have Sandy Hook text messages on your phone? And you said no, correct? You said that under oath, Mr. Jones, didn't you?
I mean, if I was mistaken, I was mistaken, but you got the messages right there.
You know what perjury is, right? I just want to make sure you know before we go any further. You know what it is.
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm not a tech guy. I told you I gave, in my testimony, the phone to the lawyers before or whatever, and so you've got my phone, but we didn't give it to you.
No, Mr. Jones. One more time. And please remember, if you need to assert the Fifth Amendment, you can. I need to know that you can do that.
I think he didn't know what phone, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, he knew exactly. He knew.
So this is in, and I'm going to stop sharing for 1 second. We'll get back to it. But this is in Travis County, is it not?
Yeah, Travis County. That's Judge Garrett Gamble. And I have so much. So we started with Judge Jenkins. And that was when I learned that there's a rule in Texas that judges can only be a certain age and then they have to retire. And
really?
So he was, he had hit that age. And he, yeah, I think it's 70.
Okay.
And he had hit that age. And so he stepped down and she replaced him. While the case was up at the Texas Supreme Court on the interlocutory appeals for the TCPA anti-slap motions.
Okay.
So
they did an anti-slap motion way on early. Oh, that sucks. Okay.
Yeah. We got anti-slapped on all of them and they all went up to the Supreme Court. It took a year and a half. All came back. We won at the Third Circuit. Then they got pushed up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said no. And which was good because that statute at the time had not been litigated a lot.
Not very much.
And there was a lot of uncertainty. And at the time, they were still allowing like car wreck defense lawyers to start filing some of
that's
this
right.
stuff.
That's right. That's right.
And so, you know, there's some really good case law that we created from that and went forward on it. So Judge Garrett Gamble did an amazing job. It's best a job I think as any judge could do at
very patient.
controlling a courtroom.
Yeah.
In a trial like that. Because, I mean, there was so many, it was a 2 week trial and I've done way longer. It is by far the most exhausting trial I've ever done because every day you had to listen to every single word because you never knew when they were going to just start lying, making stuff up, thinking they were telling the truth, but it wasn't even close. Like, so we were so intent on it. And there were so many huge moments in that trial that like in the top five, there's like a top five reel that we have. At one point in the trial, Alex Jones mid-trial on his show showed a picture of Judge Gamble and the judge in Connecticut with like Lady Justice on fire. We got to show that to the jury in trial. And then same day we got to show a clip of him on his show during trial saying that it's a blue collar simpleton jury and they don't know what planet they're on. We got to show the jury that he said that in the middle of trial. And so when he said those clips, we had to figure out those two are the two of the craziest things that'll ever happen in a civil trial. They're not in the top five. Like it's that kind of moment. I mean, at one point during Kyle Farah's close, Jones starts getting up to physically go after him. And it's like security guard pulls him down. Like, I mean, there was like crazy stuff going on. And so, but when we got this stuff that he was doing live during the trial, we had to figure out how do you get it in? How's it relevant? And so Kyle Herbert, who does the Dirty Verdict, he came up and was hanging out with us in the house. And he goes, well, what if you just ask him if he's taking this trial seriously? And we were like,
okay, Kyle.
And so that,
up. That's smart.
So yeah, if you pull the clip back before we go into that, Mark says, Mr. Jones, are you taking this trial seriously? He's like, absolutely. This is the most seriously taken trial I've ever had. You know, he
pretty good impersonation too, by the way.
I've had a lot of time, and I've spent time with him. So
yeah,
once he did that, we were like, all right, let's see how serious it is. And so, that was shout out to Kyle for helping us out get creative on it. And we were very creative across the board with the trial of Robert Swofford was our jury selection expert. He's also a lawyer. Fantastic. He does a really great job. He picks, I think he picks a big jury for cases every week at this point. He's very busy, but he's awesome. And so, yeah, it was a crazy trial. But when that moment happened, I'm a kid in a candy store. because I know everybody at our table knows what's happening. And there's like a picture, a meme that started going around me, and I'm like smirking and like watching, and they like it says something like
I could tell you're like trying to hold it back too.
Oh, I was. And like my leg is just I'm just tapping the floor. Just, I'm like, oh my. And so somebody took a screenshot of it and it said something like, find you a guy that looks at you the way Bill looks at Mark when he's cross-examining Alex Jones. And I thought it was the funniest thing. But yeah, that moment when and so if you keep playing the clip a little bit, you can hear all of a sudden he's like he just gets like, you start if I cough, maybe this will stop.
Said that he had like something going on, right? Some sickness or something, right? He was like, oh,
he had said that he had a tooth pulled.
That's right. And he's like telling the judge, I got a tooth pulled. He's trying to show the judge, like, I don't want to see the inside of your mouth. Like,
so what the camera couldn't see, but there's an HBO documentary coming out later this year. So HBO, the same crew that did Leaving Neverland, they follow us around for like a year and a half to do this show.
That's really
and
cool.
So he's the bald guy with the really expensive, like 15K or however many, I didn't know it went past 8K or 4K. I mean, he's got a studio camera in there. He's got the good angle of it, but Jones like fish hooks both sides of his mouth and then starts like shaking his tongue at the judge when he's saying it. And like a lot of people didn't see it from our angle to see what he was doing. So yeah, that was a crazy moment of it for sure.
So you already see the judge's patience here, Mr. Jones.
Oh yeah. We're like 8 days in. Already had to deal with a bunch. And like, the defense lawyer had tried the case in a way he's a criminal defense lawyer. You know, he does like a lot of federal work and he's respected for it. I have a lot of guys in my firm don't hold him highly. I think that I look at the trial lawyer, I judge a trial lawyer by your verdicts and by, you know, what you hit. And
sure.
At the end of the day, I can't help but say, hey, you know what? He held us to $4 million on actual damages. And that's substantially less than we asked for. So there was a lot of things I thought were in bad taste and almost to the point of disrespectful at times that he did, because he was pushing the limit. And in a case like this, you can't do that, especially when
you've
already been defaulted.
Yeah.
And he got sanctioned for his trial conduct, for continuously violating motions in limine. But we didn't want to move for a mistrial, right? Cause we knew we were trying the case that we wanted.
He in fact moved for a mistrial, didn't he? And then at one point you guys said, we don't want to move for a mistrial, but hey, there's some issues here.
Right. And so she said, we'll take him up post-trial. But yeah, like with Jones, as you can see, like I had numerous phones with that number. My lawyers did give it to you. See, like he's doing all this stuff and you've got to be able to, a lot of people have, and we all had, Mark is Bankston is the most prepared lawyer anyone could ever be. I mean, a month before trial, he's sending me my witness outlines. He's like, this is where I think we should go, make it your
right. Own.
And I mean, his outline was typed out, thought through, ran through. I mean, it was almost scripted how we wanted it to come out. And it was coming out the way we wanted it.
That was him saying, hey, get your shit together because I'm ready. Right. And you're like, okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. And
you need someone like that, you know, you need a little gunner on you. Around you.
Well, so here's the thing is Mark and I did all the discovery for like 4 years, right?
Right.
It comes to trial and our firm only tries cases with two lawyers. We think if you have more than two, it looks like you've got this big powerhouse firm or something. So this was the one case I think we'll ever have where we're going to trial and here comes Wes Ball and Kyle Farah. They're joining us. We're going to try it with four lawyers and Wes Ball and Kyle Farah. If you think, you know, if you think I'm worth a shit as a lawyer, I think I'm pretty good at it. I think Mark's fantastic at it. Everything we had came from Wes Ball and Kyle Farah. They are two of the most lethal people in a courtroom. And they're not only are they amazing lawyers from an orator's perspective, they speak well and they can suck a jury in and captivate them, but they're both smart as shit. So like, if you thought discovery where you got default judgment and we beat you to death in depots, you thought that was bad. Just wait. And Kyle Farah, it broke my heart to give up Owen Schroyer in trial. But Kyle Farah came in and Kyle's like, I want to do a fun one. And we're like, Owen, and I mean, if you go back on there and you watch Kyle Farah do a cross of Owen, I mean, he had the depo transcript was nothing but ammo, and he had to figure out what ammo. There's some beautiful stuff in there that he didn't get to use. But because at one point during the depo, I got Owen to say, yes, I was just a puppet for Alex Jones. Like, he said that. And so, but it didn't come out of trial because there's so much other stuff. But Kyle goes through about an hour and 20 minutes. Every question is just bludgeoning over and over. He never lets up. There's never an easy question.
It's clean, concise, and it's clean, just concise, a dagger every single time. It's nothing.
Zero yeah, wiggle.
Nothing blunt at all about it. It's very, not no blunt force trauma, just everything's very tactical.
Surgical.
Yeah. Yes.
Surgical.
That's,
and so
look, I'm coming to the conclusion that the plaintiff bar, that's what we need, because we have to captivate. That's our job. Our job is to cap. It's not, we don't do reports, we don't do anything like that. Our job is always at all times captivate, whatever we can do to create risk, right? And I've talked about it plenty of times on this podcast, but that's the smartest thing you could do. And you know, I'm sure it's great on you for doing a fantastic deposition where you've got this already lined up, and now he's having, it's a good day when you're like, I have so much good stuff. I need to pick which ones, which tools I want to use. Yeah.
I got to cut some of this out, and I don't want to. So Kyle Farah, valedictorian, Baylor Law School, genius lawyer. He was at V&E for a few years, and he decided, you know, all the great defense lawyers, especially in that day, all are now plaintiff's lawyers. Because if they're good on the defense side, they realize I can go make a shit ton more money doing this on the other side. And I don't have to keep my time. So then we have Wes Ball. Kyle Farah Mark and Kyle might be two of the smartest human beings I know. Wes is up there in that conversation, but Wes is from East Tennessee, he's from East Tennessee, and he's got a real good Tennessee Southern draw.
Okay.
And he's just got an intensity to him.
Yeah.
And he is the most captivating speaker I've gotten to see live. And he does, he's made juries cry all over the country. And he's just that kind of guy. He's got whatever it is, he's got it.
I think the feds counsel at that point is like, so what was on the table? If you see that.
Yeah. they walked into Mark and I, a really good 1-2 punch to, like, all right, like that was the, you know, that was kind of a, up to, you know, when you put me next to Wes and Kyle, like I can try the shit out of the case, but the end of the day, like, I am humble enough and have enough humility to know, like, those guys are better, and they've been doing it 10 years longer than me. They, you know, they took all the risk opening our firm. I was able to come in and immediately ride their coattails, and I traveled with them everywhere for a year and a half or 2 years when I first started, and they just took me with them to watch, and I learned and I picked and I stole things from each of them that I could use and make it my own. And that's kind of why, that's kind of who I am in the courtroom now, is because of them. And so, yeah, when you walk up and if they're coming at you, you're good luck to you. I mean, good luck on maybe trying to like do something to redirect, to clean it up if you can. But for the most part, you're not going to wiggle from them. And it's because we have these outlines that are so surgical, but you will get fired at our firm if you read from an outline. Because your outlines, you should already have read your outline and know exactly where you're going. And then you're asking your question and you're let the witness take you, because they're going to, like, any time in a depo that a witness says the word negligence, I immediately say, you said the word negligence. What does that mean to you? And they give hilarious definitions, but you take that definition and you apply it the rest of the deposition. And you do it with any kind. It's just not with the word negligence, any type of word. You said reasonable. What does that mean? So Owen Schroyer said mainstream media. I was like, well, what is mainstream media? And he made up like four prongs. And then after he made the prongs up, I realized InfoWars meets all those prongs. So I'm like, well, really? InfoWars. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, you know, he's like been around a while, has a reputation, revenue generated by advertising and something else. And before they got deplatformed, they, you know, YouTube, Facebook, all that revenue generated advertising, and they had a reputation, been around for a while. And he was like, no, no, no. And I'm like, well, you made the prompt. He's like, well, that wasn't an exclusive list. I'm like, all right, well, what are your other prompts? And he couldn't come up with them. So, like,
it's not an exclusive list, but I have no other things to put to the list.
Yeah. Like, okay. I can't think of it, but I don't want to get fired for calling us mainstream media. It's pretty much his answer. So, Yeah, like you listen to what that witness is going to say, because they're almost always not a lawyer. They're going to give you some gold, and you might just not see it right in front of you shining. You might have to, take what it is and turn it into that gold, and it's effective. But yeah, like we don't read from outlines, and we tell anybody that comes to work for us at the beginning, like there's you don't ever read from an outline. Listen to the witness, and then there's three rules you live by, which is don't make the same mistake twice, don't ever lie to us, and don't ever take shit from defense counsel. Those are the three rules I got from Westfall when I started. I've given them to every associate we had after me, and those will get passed down through the generations. That's just who we are as a firm.
I'm stealing
that. Progressive. Yeah, for sure. I mean, before the Alex Jones case, we were crushing it all over the country, but we have a low profile. We don't do a lot of advertising. We don't do a lot of social media. We don't, we just kind of lived off our reputation, word of mouth, and that's what it was.
A lot of products guys are like that for some reason. Yeah. You guys are, maybe because you guys are just too busy looking at, I don't know, some auto products manual that's like a 4-point font. So that you're like, I really don't want to do the marketing. But,
We now no longer get to do the under the radar thing.
It's not,
I'm an E-list celebrity in the Houston legal community. It's a lot of qualifiers to get there.
E-list celebrity in the Houston legal community. No, I think in the Houston legal community, you've got to be like A. I'll give you worst case scenario, B plus.
Yeah, I'll give a B plus in the Houston area. And then it's funny because we got nominated 3 months ago at the AAJ conference in Philadelphia.
That's right. Yeah.
We got nominated for National Trial Lawyers of the Year. And when they called our name to win, I give Kyle Farah a hug and I just whisper in his ear, I was like, if they only knew how much dumb stuff we've done behind the scenes. Because we're all friends. I'm 36, they're 45, 46. Like everybody's, and I've been there for 10 years. So, we've always been younger. We're, glorified, Greek housing at a college is how we've run ourselves. And so, all of a sudden we're on this big stage, we're at this huge gala with famous people there. And we're like, wait, this ain't us. Like, hey, let's cool trophy. We'll take it.
Tell me a little bit about, all of these examinations. These are all very tough witnesses. This is InfoWars. These are people who spend their entire lives every single day saying, not their definition or your definition of mainstream media, but their idea that we're off of that. So they're so used to being, for lack of a better term, controversial, right?
Yeah. And they don't have any problem stretching the truth or flat out making shit up.
Very comfortable with that, right? Very, very
allegedly not trying to get sued.
Yeah, sure. So they're very comfortable with getting stuff out without going a full detail of what it is. Right.
Yeah. Or taking facts and skewing them into a narrative and then calling it news.
Sure.
Rather than just taking facts and calling it news.
This is what you're up against, and you have to depose them under oath. And the only way because I thought about your case, and I was like, the only way I personally as an attorney would be able to look into this is if I just went off on discovery, pulling every single thing I could. And in a way, it's like a minefield of what can I use? Should I use all these demonstratives from, his show to kind of back it up that way? I mean,
So I had the benefit of Mark Bankston, who is literally certified genius and photographic memory. So we dug through all these documents, but Mark had every show, every statement, every Sandy Hook statement. He had it memorized by timestamp, date, and link. And so if you go in that prepared to any deposition where you know the facts so well that the only way that they can get out of these questions is by telling you something that may or may not be true, if you can immediately – and technology is another thing. You got to be good with technology these days because you got to be able to pull it quick and do that. I'm never walking into a deposition with a banker's box again. Right? I'm walking in with a screen. And so you have to be able to pull it quickly, know where it is so that it doesn't upset the flow and throw it in their face. And you only have to do that so many times before they're like, if you, yes, you know, because you ask him so many times, you impeach him, and finally they're like, okay, I guarantee you he knows he's got a document, so I'm just going to say yes because that seems like the answer that he wants. And it works like that. They start giving it to you. So, but yeah, being prepared on the discovery, on the documents, on the videos, in this case, we had to be up to date on pop culture. What not only what Jones has said on these shows, but what he said on other shows. He's been on Rogan 3 times talking about Sandy Hook. So, you know, things like that. And so you have to be organized in a way where when they start going astray, you can pull them back in to control them. Otherwise, you'll never. And a lot of corporate reps for like big auto and tire companies, same way. They'll be like, actually, this testing was done here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, let's pull that out. Actually, turn to page 13. That's not what happened here. So
your testing is garbage for this. Like, you can't rely on this, right? But you're lying right now. And you kind of,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once, I will say this. Once you take about, 50, 75 depots as a lawyer, you get comfortable enough where if you forgot it, you had a depot and you were unprepared, you could go in there. And if it was a case like your bread and butter, right. Like if you do, you know, car wrecks and it was right. Just a car wreck case, you're going to depose an investigating officer, sure. Right?
Could do it.
You could pull it off. Right. Yeah. Right. When it comes to something like a products case or something like this, you can't, you can do it to an extent, but if you don't know the facts, you don't have the ability to pull them back in and keep control of them and you can lose control quick. And so it sucks, right? There's nothing fun about preparing for a depo. There really isn't. There's just not. You're reading a bunch of documents you've already read once. You're trying to keep them into an outline, and then you got to figure out a way to keep them organized on the side. It's just not fun. And the depo's fun in that when you're in there, but getting there. Same with trial. Trial is fun when you're speaking. After the, you know, during the evenings of trial and the months leading up to it, sucks. Yeah. Anybody that says like, I love trying cases, it's like you either try, you know, 2-day trials only, or you've never tried enough. You have not tried enough cases to hate it yet because it's just not fun. It isn't. They're, like, talking is fun, but it's that's a very small portion of what it takes. Yeah. The motion practice. Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of hours it takes outside of trial to prep for it is ridiculous. I forgot what the number was, like how many hours you have to spend per hour in trial was like significant. And I was like,
oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 12 or 20, right? Because it's just, so much goes into it, especially when you're on kind of, and we took this case seriously for two reasons. One, we had now been appreciated by them because when we took the case, we didn't think he had any money. We were doing it because it was the right thing to do. And we were going to help these people out.
Yeah.
We get halfway through the trial.
You didn't think Alex Jones had money?
Not anything significant, right? We didn't appreciate how big his audience was. And, we start getting into discovery and we start learning how much money he's pulling in. And we're like, oh, okay. And then, so that factored in, but not really as much as the factor of our clients are sitting behind us. They lived through this. And this, like, as fun as discovery was, trial was not fun. It was, we had to have internal discussions on who was going to take parents. And our rule was if they don't cry, we can't cry. I had an 8-year-old at the time. You know, my son's 8 years old right now. He was 7 at the time of trial. Like, I didn't have the ability to do it. And so Wes Ball, you know, fucking ice cold in his veins when it comes to this, pulled himself together and he just did a masterful job. And then when he did the punitives closing, I mean, I was ready to go register to vote for him for, you know, office or something. It was fantastic. Kyle's close in the compensatory damages was amazing. Jones tried to get up out of his chair at him. And then Wes's passionate plea of like, stop letting people monetize mistruths. Like, yeah. That's what we're doing right now. And so, you know, I hope it did send a message to a lot of the, you know, podcasting has gotten big and right wing. They don't want to be conspiracy theorists, right? Because you lose credibility. They want to be that. They just want to be like the far right, you know, closer to Breitbart than Fox News. When you get out there, you realize to get that narrative, you got to start pushing that limit a little bit. And on the same side, the left does it too. Don't get me wrong. As liberal minded as we are at our firm, we have no problem taking down a lefty. We don't see political lines in this. We see this as we're doing a service to this country because we have lost the truth as a country. right now you can have an argument with somebody on the other side of the aisle and they will say, nuh-uh, and somehow that's become an acceptable answer in a discussion. And it throws you on the, you're saying this is fact, I'm saying it's not, but you have to prove to me it's true rather than me prove why I think you're wrong. And that's just not, that's
not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Yeah. It's like putting your Facebook page up on your wall.
It's strange, you know, it's definitely a different case, right? The injuries are totally different. You're dealing with parents who are suffering and then they had to add significantly to that suffering.
For 8 years.
I can't even imagine how you become or you create a compensatory damages model for something like that.
So the Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis were the two parents that went to trial for us last August. Their case was horrific because the defamatory statement that Owen Schroyer said on Alex Jones' programming was, you didn't hold your dead son. You didn't see, that's impossible. You didn't see a bullet head as you held your son the evening, you know, the last time that he was in your arms. And Neil did, but they had, you know, Neil had went on to Megyn Kelly and did an interview to try and get people to stop and say like, hey, I'm real. And Neil's politically pretty aligned with some of the things that Jones and Schroyer stand for. And he went on to say like, hey guys, this is real. Like you're killing me. Just make it stop. Like my son died. I held his body. There's a bullet hole from an AR in his head. And so.
Wow. He's suffering too.
God. Right. As he's suffering. And so we brought in some experts. Dr. Roy Lubit was fantastic. He came out of the Northeast and he is a psychiatrist who deals with, I can give you a million compliments in a day, but if I say, oh, hello, cool, you know, what shirt tucked in, what, you got a blind date later? You will think about that when you go to sleep at night. You will not think about all the nice things everybody else in the world said. And so he goes through what one negative thing can do to somebody. And because they were trying to say like, you know, oh, well, Congress and all these people came and yet all these people supporting you and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but you had this group of people that ended up growing that were saying you're lying, your son didn't die, or that there's something fishy going on, or the government killed your kid.
So their defense was you had so much support. What is one naysayer? Kind of.
That plus we have, they tried, but they couldn't because they, when he got deplatformed from YouTube, that's where they had a lot of these videos saved. So they didn't have copies to produce, but the litigation started before he was deplatformed, so he had a duty to preserve.
Right.
He didn't. So they wanted to say, we've done 15 million hours of InfoWars over the past 8 years, and we've only done 96 hours on this. You know, they were trying to say it's 0.001% or whatever, but the judge wouldn't allow him to do it because we're like, judge, they didn't – we had to, the videos we have are the ones we found for the most part.
Right.
They can't help us at all. There's no way they get to then say that's all of it. And she agreed with us, which was, I think, 100% the right ruling.
That's right. So at some point during the trial, they did produce something, right? And they're like, you guys are like, well, hold on, this isn't making any sense. You know, you guys said you guys didn't have, what's going on here? Right. And then I think she ended up excluding it. Is that right?
Yeah. So well, there was, they had some videos on there, I think on their exhibit list that we had never seen before.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah. Wait, hold on a second. I got a question here. Where did that come from and why? Because I've never seen it and I'm curious. And so, yeah. And by that time, they lost so much credibility with the judge, with both judges, really. I mean, Jenkins, he threatened to default them at the TCPA stage. And so
way back when, huh?
At the beginning of this case, yeah, 2016. So, we had really gotten them to a point where we got to control every single aspect of that trial. And I don't think I could be more proud of my guys. Mark, especially because he built this kingdom. Westbaugh and Kyle Farah funded that kingdom and then came in for trial and put on a show to let everybody know that, because Texas trial lawyers are different. We do a lot of work in Philadelphia. We do cases all over the country. Yeah. They don't do it like us. And really Houston specifically, like you ask somebody, hey, who's the best PI lawyer in Austin? Who's the best PI lawyer? Name a great PI lawyer in Dallas. If somebody asks you about Houston, you got a Mount Rushmore.
So many. Yeah.
You know,
it's a little frustrating for
Yeah, you know, I mean, like you me. Go O'Quinn, Jamil, like same with yeah. me. Like, I mean, it's a we've got to one. You got to figure out a way to get to the big boy table. Then you got to figure out a way to fit in there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Houston just does it differently. We're very aggressive, and we talk to juries like people rather than putting on a show of some sort of legal, you know, Atticus Finch like act of an you know, of an old uncle. So. Yeah, we came in. They the you know West Kyle and West Ball and Kyle Farrah came in and just let everybody know like this is why we're successful. And I mean, I most proud I'll be in my profession was you know kind of this aspect of it. I don't care about the National Trial Lawyers Trophy and all that. Trophies are cool for an hour, maybe a night. But like hugging Scarlett as the verdict came down. That's like. There's a one of the newspapers got a picture of it, and it's like I got it framed in my office. Like it's one of my most favorite moments of my life, other than maybe the birth of my son. But he's starting to act up in school, so I'm not even sure.
For our viewers, you know, we've been talking about it for a while. I'll let you say it. What was the actual final verdict?
Compensatory 4.4, 4.9, and then another $45 million in punitives. So just. A hair just under 50 million. And then you had pretrial interest. And fortunately, that verdict, along with the Connecticut verdict, that we worked close with the Connecticut team of lawyers as well. We shared information. So with that, he was tossed into bankruptcy. We're still in bankruptcy, trying to figure out how we can, whether or not the bankruptcy is going to blow. There's a good chance that in February, we're going to try Lenny Posner's case. And
really?
Yeah, Mark and I would get another bite at the apple and go get try that one because the bankruptcy is might be deemed undischargeable.
Is it Court Acres doing a bankruptcy, I think? Is that right?
So Court Acres is one of my close friends. Met him in law school. He was a year older, and he had a name for himself as like the top dog at mock trial, and I was the new 2L. And my first tournament was in San Francisco, and we broke and they didn't. We broke into the semifinals and they did not. He was pissed. And, but he and I could get along great. And so, we started figuring out that, money starts getting transferred and there's all these different shell, LLCs and different things and they're moving money around. And so
real easy way to get bankruptcy, pull the money out.
So I get Court involved because Court does a ton of white collar criminal defense. He's one of the very few, him and Gary Zabachman are probably the only two I've known of that are at the federal level doing white collar criminal defense at the high levels. And they're not 60 years old. Like at that level, it's all a bunch of older, very established guys. And they are just that good that they found Court worked with Dan Cogdale, who just did the Paxton defense in the impeachment. Gary, I met when I was working with Kent Schaefer and Nicole DeBoard when I was in law school, he was kind of their young and up and coming guy. And so those two guys are the only two that I know of that are practicing at that level. And so I brought Court in, and we actually brought in another guy from our law school, Avi Moschenberg, and he does Tufta work, Texas Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. And so we brought them on to say like, hey, go get us some money. And they're ruthless. Oh, they are ruthless. It's kind of stayed with the bankruptcy, and Avi's kind of given us the play by play as it's coming out, but. It was a kind of a thrown together Bad News Bears Little League team of people that we're friends with that are smart and that are effective and doing it for the same reasons we are.
I don't know. It sounds like you brought in some like NFL like player level situations. I don't know about a small little league, but you know, it's your own. You know, kind of some takeaways from this is that you've got to do your discovery up front. You got to be ruthless about that, right? And then you've got to prep, make an outline, but be able to sit with the witness. So that way, if it's a
tough
witness,
what the discovery is, you know, don't just ask for it and then fight about it. Then go through it and get it. Form your case as you're doing it.
And don't ask for discovery just to ask for discovery. You know, like there's a lot of stuff on TTLA and HTLA and all that stuff where we're asking each other for
trucking discoveries,
which is okay. That's okay. You know, like if I'm getting trucking discovery from, I don't know. Pick any great trucking attorney, Michael Cowan, right? I'm going to trust that he has vetted his very, you know, a lot, but I may not use the same things he does. Or
no, take it, go through and make it your own. Yeah, like that's the thing. It's being a plaintiff's lawyer at this stage with technology and being able to share documents with each other. And TTLA, HTLA are groups that are awesome because we share stuff. But like, don't just be lazy. Take what they have. Take what they have and get creative. Push the limit. Like, if you're not pushing the limit, you're never going to be at that table rubbing elbows with everybody else. And if you are, nobody's going to treat you like you belong there.
No, you're right. Bill, I really appreciate you coming on. I hope you guys get through that bankruptcy. I hope you guys deal with everything, but you did a fantastic service for your clients and it's really impressive. It really was. It was a really impressive trial. I watched a lot of it and in prepping for this, I was like, man, they were just Teflon tight. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, if you wanted to, if you're interested on just, it's a unique one, but the 30B6 depots I did that are on the Facebook page will show you just kind of how I meticulously go through the topics and how I apply them going through. That's another good one. And then, I talked to Mark. He's so slammed right now, but he's 100% going to come on. So you can talk with him about, I mean, he's the TCPA defamation guy. He's everything. So
let's have you guys both on. Let's just talk.
Yeah, for sure.
Stuff is always so good for young attorneys. And I get messages and emails just like, you know, this really helped me in this. This helped me prep for this. Helped me think about this. So, you know, the more and more content we can produce, the better the bar gets.
For sure. But, absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, absolutely.